Have you been to NCI Affiliates Post Office and Gift Shop? It's off Linnae Road, just past the Food for Less Shopping Center. You can take care of your business essentials such as shipping, copying, faxing, and shredding, as well as stock up on See's Candy. Don't forget NCI's thrift stores in Atascadero and Paso Robles to find shopping bargains. NCI Affiliates, building partnerships and creating choices since 1979.
Vicki Silva is your North County real estate professional with over 40 years of real estate experience in Paso Robles and the surrounding North County communities. Selling your home can be a life-altering experience, so it's important that the sale is handled with care and professionalism. Let Vicki Silva take care of it all for you. Give her a call today at RE/MAX Parkside in Paso Robles, 805-610-2650. Vicki Silva, 610-2650.
Lars Larson on KPRL, brought to you by Boyd's Tobacco and Elegant Gifts. Enjoy a handmade cigar in the lounge, 625 Spring Street. Must be 21 years of age or older.
Real Red Meat Radio.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Somebody at the White House has been smoking the devil's lettuce.
Honestly provocative talk radio.
More than half the women in my cabinet, more than half the people in my cabinet, more than half the women in my administration are women.
Lars.
Never apologize for being patriotic.
Our beloved republic is in the hands of madmen. This is a dark day.
No, here's your host.
My memory is so bad I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday and it's honestly provocative talk radio. And I can tell you at this point, they plan to pick a total of 18 jurors for Donald Trump's criminal trial. The first criminal trial of any president or former president of the United States. And it's happening in the very partisan city of New York City. They have now managed to swear in seven jurors in that case. And I think it's notable that a New York Times reporter, Suzanne Craig, who has been covering this, she talked about the fact that Judge Merchan, this very biased judge who's hearing the case, who's not even going to give Donald Trump time off from the criminal trial to be able to go and attend his teenage son's graduation from high school. But Judge Merchan did allow a potential juror to stay on the jury, even after Donald Trump's lawyers showed that she had posted a video of people celebrating the 2020 election and the result of Joe Biden as president of the United States. Now, that's part of what's amazing about this. They can be so blatantly, openly partisan. And then the judge proceeded to tell Donald Trump that he wasn't happy about the fact that Trump reacted negatively to the idea that somebody was being chosen for his jury in a trumped up, pun intended, trumped up criminal case against him, who had celebrated the 2020 election, and that Donald Trump, I guess, is not supposed to have any expression on his face. So the judge gave him a lecture about that. Does that give you some sense of what the jury is going to be like when they finally have all 18 of them, 12 primary jurors and 6 alternates chosen? This is absolutely crazy. In any case, welcome to the program. Glad to have you on board. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, happens right here every day, and you're invited to take part at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you happen to be a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our poll on X, which we try to make as timely as we possibly can, my great producers and I get together on this. Sometimes I write them, sometimes they write them. That would be Mackenzie and Joel and Donovan. Today's question, I wrote this one because it makes me mad that 2 years ago, Joe Biden decided to raid the emergency supplies of oil that America has set aside. And we don't have that very much. The country, just so you get a picture of what this looks like, our country uses about 18 million barrels of oil every single day. About a third of that is for transportation. I know that sometimes when you hear about oil, you always think, well, that's the gas I put in my tank, or the diesel that goes into the long haul rig that actually brings everything you eat, everything you wear, and all your consumer goods. You're right about that. But that only goes for about a third of it. The other two thirds is used for all the other things that make up our modern society. 18 million barrels a day. How much do we have in emergency reserves? Well, we're supposed to have a little bit north of 700 million barrels, except we don't. Number one, the emergency oil supply, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is its formal name, was supposed to have over 700 million barrels. And it wasn't full when Donald Trump was president. And at the time, oil prices dropped to $30-some a barrel. And Trump went to Congress and said, I'd like to refill it. And the Congress, Democrats, told him, no, we're not going to refill the emergency supply while the price is very, very good. Now, I think that was abundantly stupid. But then take yourself forward to 2022. Joe Biden in 2022, the pandemic was long over, and Joe Biden had an emergency. And the emergency was not a hurricane. It wasn't an earthquake. It wasn't war. It wasn't a refinery blowing up somewhere. No, Joe Biden's emergency was the 2022 midterm elections. And he raided the reserve for 200 million barrels, about a third of the oil that was in there. A third of the oil. He just spent down the emergency supply. So now there's about 360 million barrels, which is about 20 days consumption for the United States of America. In other words, it's a fairly thin kind of margin to have. And now, while the oil industry analysts are saying, including one from the, I'll cite my source, the Macquarie Group, which studies global oil and gas supplies, they said, we expect that Joe Biden is probably going to raid the reserve again. And how do they know that? Well, earlier this year, the United States Congress voted the money to tell the president, even though prices are high right now, let's refill our emergency supplies. And Joe Biden's White House said, no, we're not going to refill the emergency supplies. And do you know why they're not going to do it? Because think of it this way. If you need to put a couple of hundred million barrels out to replace the couple of hundred million that Joe Biden raided from the reserve 2 years ago, you're going to be pulling oil off the market. What's that going to do? Well, Econ 101 tells you if you pull some of those supplies off the market to refill the emergency supplies, you're going to reduce the amount of oil in the marketplace. Prices are going to go up. The only problem is, so they decided not to refill it. What did that have the effect of doing? It left more oil in the marketplace, which helped to hold prices down. And even despite that, gasoline prices have gone up about 20 cents in the last few weeks. So Joe Biden is concerned. He understands we're coming up on the summer driving season. If Americans get out to go on their summer vacation and every time they walk up to that pump to refill their car or truck, they are reminded gas prices are dramatically higher today than they were just 3 years ago when Joe Biden took the oath of office. And they're going to be reminded of that. Now, they may be steadfast Democrats, but they might still say to themselves, you know what? I know who made these oil prices go up. I know the guy who took 200 separate actions, including, most famously, cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline, but a lot of other things that Joe Biden did that allowed him to claim in one of his State of the Union addresses between then and now, we're going to be out of oil. America won't even use oil 10 years from now. Now, that got a laugh from the Republicans who knew how ridiculous it was. But I'm just telling you, Joe Biden said it. So he believes that America won't even need to use oil to power our transportation future just 10 years from now. He's promised to put the oil companies out of business altogether. And he even promised to do that in one of the town halls when he was still a candidate. He said, I'm willing to do it even if it costs several hundred thousand jobs in America. That tells you how steadfast he is. So he's going to leave the oil reserve, not empty, but half full at this point. It's about 50% full. And he may raid it again because as oil and gas prices go up, he wants to be able to either slow the increase or bring the prices down. Now, if you say that's a good idea, would it be a good idea for you to raid the family's savings account? Because you say, I'm not making as much money as I was, and prices of everything have gone up. So let's raid the family's emergency savings account, and let's spend some of that money. We'll be able to maintain our style of living. Your wife or your family is probably going to tell you, you know what? If you do that, Dad, we're going to end up in the same boat in a year, except our emergency savings will be gone. But Joe Biden hopes to win that election in November, and he'll do it even if he has to do it at the expense of America. Back in a moment.
Hey there, you and aisle two. I see you by the fiber and laxatives. You still using those to manage your constipation with belly pain? If your symptoms keep coming back, you may have irritable bowel syndrome with constipation, or IBS-C. So you may need more than over-the-counter treatments to manage it. Ask your doctor about how Linzess can help you get ahead of it.
Linzess linaclotide is a prescription medicine that treats IBS-C in adults. It's not a laxative. It's a once-daily pill that helps you get ahead of your symptoms. It's proven to help you have more frequent and complete bowel movements and helps relieve overall abdominal symptoms, belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. These symptoms were studied in combination, not individually. Do not give Linzess to children less than 2. It may harm them. Do not take Linzess if you have a bowel blockage. Get immediate help if you develop unusual or severe stomach pain, especially with bloody or black stools. The most common side effect is diarrhea, sometimes severe. If it's severe, stop taking Linzess and call your doctor right away. Other side effects include gas, stomach area pain, and swelling. Learn more at Linzess.com or call 1-800-LINZESS.
Hi, I'm Henry Winkler. My eyes are very important to me. My eyes connect me with everything I love. I loved my late father-in-law dearly. He always lit up a room, but his vision dimmed with age. He had age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. And since partnering with Apellis, I've learned there's an advanced form of dry AMD called geographic atrophy, or GA. His struggle with vision loss made me want to help others know about GA's warning signs. For some, colors appear dull or washed out. For others, hazy or blurred vision make it hard to see details, like fine print on price tags. Many have trouble seeing in the dark, making driving at night difficult. GA gets worse over time and cannot be reversed. If you think you have GA, don't wait. Treatments are available. Ask a retina specialist about FDA-approved treatments for GA and go to GAWon'tWait.com.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. Wounded Warrior Project was created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war, whether those scars are physical or mental. Wounded Warrior Project, we never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org.
COVID-19 has cast a spotlight on the stark inequalities that drive poverty. The poorest communities in the U.S. and around the world are suffering the most. Oxfam believes we can put systems in place to protect health and livelihoods in the future if we work together with dignity and compassion. Learn how you can help offer safety to the most vulnerable and fight for a more resilient future at OxfamAmerica.org. Sponsored by Oxfam America.
Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates.
I am Central Coast Attorney Dave Duringer, and I believe in faith, family, and freedom. Without faith and family, there is no freedom. So the mission of my law firm, Protective Law Corporation in Morro Bay, is to help families grow family power by transmitting life, fortune, and honor to descendants. Most gun owners have some sort of training, how not to shoot themselves, maybe how to hit a target. Defensive handgun training is different because of the need for speed. Very few gun owners have this training. Even fewer practice it regularly. Sign up for our free training at guntrust.org and do drills in our office that you cannot do at the local range. If you are serious about asset protection and family protection, call me, Dave Duringer of Protective Law Corp in Morro Bay. Dial 805-225-5105 or just click on my phone number at lawnews.tv. Again, lawnews.tv, lawnews.tv.
Sometimes it's what you've been waiting for, and sometimes it's unexpected. You're pregnant. Tree of Life Pregnancy Care Center is here to help. Services include pregnancy tests and ultrasounds, maternity and baby items, post-abortion support, and lots of helpful information. It's all confidential, and it's all free. There's a Tree of Life in San Luis Obispo, Atascadero, and Paso Robles. Visit our website at treeoflifepsc.com or call us at 805-543-6000. That's 805-543-6000. Tree of Life.
From Bradley to San Luis Obispo, San Miguel to Santa Margarita, this is where the North County comes to talk. KPRL.
Talk about serious issues, but even Lars has a sense of humor.
I have a joke for you. The government in this town is excellent and uses your tax dollars efficiently.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. And with last weekend's attempted attack by Iran on Israel and Congress dithering on what they're going to do about that, Ukraine, and a lot of other issues, it'll be especially interesting to talk to our friend Frank Gaffney, founder of the Center for Security Policy, author of the number one best-selling book on Amazon, The Indictment, Prosecuting the Chinese Communist Party and Its Friends for Crimes Against America, China, and the World. Frank, welcome back.
Thank you, Lars. Great to be with you.
You kind of posed the question, are the Democrats purposely delaying and hindering some kind of aid for Israel? And should we be giving this aid to Israel? Because I've had a lot of people raise questions about that. I've pushed back a bit by, you know, there are people, Frank, honestly, who will call me and say, well, you know, they wouldn't have a military butt for us. And I said, well, they've got a national defense a budget of about $25 billion, and we give them about three of that. So we give them about 10%. So it's not true that without America, Israel would not have a military. On the other hand, they're in the middle of a shooting war with Hamas, and who knows, maybe a shooting war to come with Iran. So give us your view on this.
Well, it sure is a shooting war as far as Iran is concerned. And the question is whether Israel's going to be allowed to fight back. And the Biden administration doesn't want it to. I think the people of Israel, and certainly people who love Israel, expect them to, and they better. But there is something to the comment that you were getting from your listener there, Lars. Barack Obama engineered a deal with the Israelis during his presidency that they would be able to buy equipment from us, provided they didn't manufacture their own. So to the extent that that deal remains in place, and I think it's now fraying because the Israelis clearly have to have their own supply lines, there is a dependency upon us that is both completely ill-advised, contrary to what Israel's historic position has been, but also puts them in a position whereby when Joe Biden says, we're not going to give you replacements for what you've just expended on, say, Iron Dome or David Sling or Arrow missiles, that's a big problem for the Israelis. And it's compounded, of course, Lars, by this other piece, and that is the support that the U.S. government under Joe Biden has given to Israel's mortal enemy, and oh, by the way, ours, namely Iran. This is just insane, and it's dangerous in the extreme because it not only emboldens the Iranians, of course, it gives them vastly more capability. And we saw it on display. I think you used the term that, you know, they tried to attack Israel. They did attack Israel.
Yeah, I don't want that to be misunderstood, Frank. I mean,
when
you launch 300 plus missiles and drones and 99% of them are intercepted, it was an attack for sure, but it was an attack where the punch never landed and because of Israel's good defense, right?
Well, I think primarily they got a little help from us. They got a little help from the Brits and the Jordanians and I think even the Saudis. But predominantly it was the Israelis. You're right. And the thing is, that entailed the expenditure of an awful lot of defensive equipment. And I'm reminded back in 1973, Lars, Richard Nixon was faced with a kind of similar moment where Israel's very existence was in peril because of the so-called Yom Kippur surprise attack against Israel by a number of Arab states. And he made the decision very swiftly to engage in an emergency resupply of Israel to help, you know, it get through that war. I'm not sure they would have if that resupply hadn't been made. We should be doing an emergency resupply right now. And we're seeing all kinds of games being played, notably by Joe Biden and his administration, also by Chuck Schumer and Democrats in the Congress. And unfortunately, the Republicans have, to some extent, not been essentially demanding that Israel get the support it needs. I think they're beginning to change that around, and I hope they will succeed in doing so with Mike Johnson's direction that we're going to go ahead and do a freestanding bill to try to help pay for the resupply. But it's not just paying for it. The Israelis are interested in buying much of this kit, and it's been slow rolled by the Biden team.
Well, tell me this, though. You piqued my interest because I didn't know that we had forbidden them to make their own. Because I remember that part of history was they wanted to buy tanks from the United States. We had good ones. We have good ones. And we apparently told them no. And they went out and developed their own, the Merkava, which is, by all accounts, a pretty good tank, the use you have to put that to. What would be the logic behind telling an ally, we don't want you to be self-sufficient? Because, they're not in NATO, but to use NATO as a comparison, our deal in NATO is supposed to be make your own country as self-sufficient as you can, and then you will be less likely to have to call on NATO for help because you'll be better defended, and presumably you'll deter people from attacking you. And the deal in NATO is supposed to be every country has to pull its own share of the weight by having its own military and being ready. And then if you're ready enough, the bad guys never hit you. Why would we want Israel to be less capable of producing its own armaments to fight back against enemies which surround the whole country?
I can only say that you have to recall where this came from. Barack Obama. Barack Obama was deeply hostile to Israel, especially to Benjamin Netanyahu. He was deeply committed to the Muslim Brotherhood. He was deeply committed to the Iranians. And I think he wanted to create a condition under which that dependency could be exploited to defend, and otherwise help the people that he was favoring at the expense of the people that have been our traditional and very vital allies, namely the Israelis. I can't give you a better explanation other than that I think it was meant to do harm to Israel. And it was predictable that it would at some point. And that point is right now.
Hey, Frank, there's another issue that just came up today I want to ask you about. The House Committee on China has come out with a report, as it came out earlier today, that said not only is China sending fentanyl here, but the Chinese government owns some of the major producers of fentanyl and its precursors, and they're actually using tax subsidies and other government incentives to incentivize the production of fentanyl, not for use in China, but for export into the United States. And I wondered whether you'd seen that report or not.
I haven't had a chance to study it, Lars. I have been hearing about it. And, it's about time that somebody told the truth about this. What the Biden administration has been feeding us is this line that, we're going to be cooperating with the Chinese government to try to reduce this problem. This is a completely manufactured problem at the hands of the Chinese Communist Party. It is chemical warfare against us, and it's deadly, and they've killed, by some estimates, several times the number of people, Americans, who died in Vietnam. And they've gotten away with it completely. There's been essentially no punishment for it. And, the numbers are continuing to spike. And think about this, Lars. Not all, but most of the people who are being killed off are, military-aged folks, mostly men. And I think this is a strategic play by them, as well as, turnabout fair play on the opium wars of history. There was the Brits that did that to them, but it's payback time, I think, in part.
It sounds like it. And not only that, but as part owners of those companies that are manufacturing this poison and shipping it into America while not allowing its distribution in their own country, the Chinese Communist Party, the communists, are actually making money by selling poison into the United States. That's Frank Gaffney from the Center for Security Policy. His number one book, The Indictment, about China. We'll be back in just a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Ace Auto Care in Atascadero. The best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs, everything you want.
News, I'm Tom Regani. Some progress made in day two of jury selection in the hush money case against Donald Trump. Fox's Nate Foy has more from New York.
Tonight, seven jurors are seated with opening statements right now, set to begin on Monday of next week, but that timing is very much fluid and dependent on how quickly the remaining five jurors and six alternates are selected.
Trump is accused of covering up payments to porn actress to keep her silent about an affair she says they had that he denies. The House has delivered articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas to the Senate for trial. Florida Republican Senator Rick.
The Paso Robles City Council.
Say with me, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I begin with the words of King David in Psalms 123. To you I lifted up my eyes, you who dwell in heaven. Almighty God, Master of the universe, the members of this esteemed body, the Paso Robles City Council, convene here today to fulfill one of the seven commandments which you issued to Noah and his family after the Great Flood. The commandment that all societies be governed by just laws. As stated in the book of Genesis and its sacred commentaries, you issued at the time the following seven laws. To worship you and you alone, never to blaspheme your holy name, not to commit murder, not to commit adultery, not to steal, lie, or cheat, not to be cruel to any living creature, and that every society be governed by just laws based on the recognition and acknowledgement of you, O God, as the sovereign ruler of all humankind and all nations. I invoke your blessing today upon the City Council gathered here as they prepare to resume their work on behalf of the citizens of this great city of Paso Robles. We ask your divine blessing for all their constituents, wherever they may be. Gathered here in a meeting of elected leaders, let us recall the preeminent leader, the biblical Moses, as the contemporary spiritual leader, the Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem M. Schneerson of Righteous Memory, explained, Moses was not merely a leader who set guidelines and imparted knowledge to his people, but he also had the unique gift of being able to reveal every individual's inherent potential. Almighty God, please bestow the wisdom upon the City Council members gathered here today to legislate laws that are not only just and compassionate, but ones that enable all Paso Robles of all ages, backgrounds, and cultures the ability to achieve their true potentials. Please invoke your blessings upon the Paso Robles City Council, as amongst other things, they follow the American tradition of over four decades established by the U.S. Congress and presidents to mark the 122nd birthday of the great spiritual leader, the Rebbe, on April 19th as Education and Sharing Day here in the great city of Paso Robles, a day upon which to recall that education must go beyond the acquisition of knowledge, but must also focus on building moral character. May there be peace and harmony in this great city of Paso Robles, across this great state, and in the Holy Land of Israel, and across the entire globe. May it be your will, God Almighty, that the tireless efforts of the City Council be successful, empowering all the individuals in this great city to be decent human beings, considerate of others, reverent of you, and ready to do their bit towards the ultimate goal of a perfect world in which your presence will be manifest. Amen.
Thank you, Rabbi Mayor Gordon. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bausch.
Here.
Councilmember Roden.
Here.
Councilmember Strong.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Gregory.
Here.
And Mayor Hammond. Mayor Hammond is not in the meeting at this moment. We are expecting him to join us virtually. He was here a little bit ago.
Okay. Thank you. Staff introductions, please.
Melissa Boyer, City Clerk, joined by Shauna Howenstein, Civic Engagement Coordinator, and Karen Jackson, IT Technician.
Warren Frace, Community Development Director.
Brian Cornell, Administrative Services Director.
Dita Esperanza, Capital Projects Engineer. Christopher
Buckley, Utilities Director. Darren Gash, City Clerk.
Paul Sloan, Manager. Jeff Miles, Assistant
police commander?
We have a lot of shy police officers back there, but thank you for coming. And believe me, I don't say shy because I know you guys aren't. Anyway, Ty Lewis, city manager.
Elizabeth Hall, city attorney. Mayor Hammond, have you joined the meeting?
Yes, Melissa. I'm online.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome, John. All right. This time, I'd like to report from closed session, please, to our city attorney.
Thank you, sir. The council went into closed session on two items. One was initiation of litigation. The other was exposure to litigation. One case for each item. There is no reportable action at this time. The council has not concluded their conversations and will be reconvening in closed session at the conclusion of this meeting.
Okay. Thank you. And also, Elizabeth, could you please explain where John Hammond is?
So Mayor Hammond is out of town, and we have noticed this as a teleconferencing meeting. It is, back up. It has also been noticed in addition to here at the city, it's been noticed at his teleconference location, which is 96105 Ocean Breeze Drive, Fernandina Beach, Florida, 32034. And so we are proceeding under the traditional Brown Act rules, which allow us to have a teleconferencing as long as the majority of the council is present in the jurisdiction.
Yeah, Pro Tem Gregory?
Yes, John?
Yeah, I am out here in Florida to meet with the executive director of the Cecil Spaceport, talking about their FAA license that they currently have, and be back in Paso accordingly.
Very good, John. Thank you for that. Okay. At this time, we're going to go ahead and do some presentations. And our first presentation is a presentation of life-saving metal to our police officers, Josh Lewis and Alex Haskell. I'm going to join the presentation, but I know it's good for me, so I'm going to let Ty do all the talking. So. So,
there we go. Testing. So, yeah, we have Chief Nord, we have Officer Lewis and Officer Haskell here this evening to receive a medal from the department for their actions on March 20th, whereby they helped save a young man from making a horrible decision that would have likely ended his life, if not for the life of other people that were traveling below on the freeway, below the Niblick Bridge on Highway 101. It's a very momentous occasion. I'll save some of my comments for afterwards. Chief, I'd like to turn it over to you from here.
So it's not often we get to recognize our law enforcement staff, and every day they do amazing things. Every day they go out and they touch lives and they save lives and they help. But it's very rare that is something that is as special as this. We had two officers, Officer Lewis and Officer Haskell, on that date, they went out and they got a call of a suicidal subject on the Niblick Bridge, and he was up on top of the wiring that goes over the freeway. And immediately when they got there, they started talking to him with just such compassion. I've been doing this a long time, and I can tell you, I've heard 20-year veterans not be able to touch someone or to reach someone like they did that day. As they were talking to him, I watched the video, and I knew the outcome. And watching the video, I had anxiety of wondering what was going to happen, because it was just that close. It was that close to see the person scooting closer and closer and his legs dangling. And again, you just don't know what's going to happen. Officer Haskell continued to engage him, ask him questions, tell him how much he cared, that other people cared, really trying to take his mind off of what was happening. As that went on, it was clear that there came a point where it just wasn't working anymore. And with quick action and teamwork, Officer Lewis immediately jumped up on the fence, putting himself in danger, and actually together they were able to pull him off and save his life that day. Within the next 24 hours, 48 hours, that individual actually called the police department to thank them. He said, thank you very much. You know, I was actually in a bad place. I'm doing better now. Thank you for saving us. So, I just want to say thank you to these two. You know, it's not often that we get to save a life and actually celebrate it with everyone. And it's nice to actually see more cops here than are firing. That's rare. So, but today I would like to award Officers Lewis and Officer Haskell with the life-saving medal from the police department.
While the chief is struggling to get those free for everybody, I'll fill some time. So just so you know, there's only a handful of these that have been given out in the history of the department. Some of you might remember we've had some pretty stressful events in this community over the last couple of years. One of those being the Mason Lyra event, the downtown shooter that was here a few years back. And we did issue some medals during that time. But these are a very special occasion, and the reason they're so special for me, and one of the reasons why I think it's important for the community to hear this, is even though the Officer Lewis and Haskell made a definite impact on that young man's life that day, what a lot of people don't realize is the trauma and the... A lot of people, except for maybe the families and the officers themselves, don't realize the amount of trauma and the amount of emotion that they carry along with them, even in an event like this where it had an ultimately positive outcome. All the men and women that you see in the back there are definitely, and I know these two officers would underscore that, would have done the same thing in the same position. But it just really underscores the dedication, the investment in our community and the investment in people that our police department displays. So I can't tell you how important it and how proud I am of these two officers and your police department chief. I think that we have the finest police officers in the county, if not in the state. And this is just a firsthand example that you all get to share in that shows, you know, the amount of dedication that our officers have. So let's give them one more round of applause.
Thank you for coming. Really, I was just doing my job. Every one of the officers would have done the same thing. It's just I happened to be the one at that call of the day. So thank you guys thanks for coming, everyone.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, everybody, for being here. I feel very honored to serve amongst all of the brave men and women of our department. And same thing, it was definitely a stressful situation. I was thankful to have my partner there with me, and I know anybody would have done exactly the same thing in the same circumstances. So thank you, everybody. I really appreciate everybody being here and for your support.
Okay, so our next proclamation is for the National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week. So would everybody come on up? Just do it that way. All right. And your name, please?
I'm Dispatcher Sarah Fanna.
Support Services Manager Kate McKinley.
Whereas the professional public safety dispatcher plays a vital role in the protection of human life and property and the preservation of law and order guaranteed by our Constitution. And whereas the incidence of crime, alcohol and drug abuse, suicides, medical and fire emergencies, broken homes, and child and elderly abuse are a daily occurrence. And whereas the safety of our police officers, firefighters, and public are dependent on the quality and the accuracy of the information obtained from citizens who telephone the Paso Robles Police Department Communication Center. And whereas the professional public safety dispatcher is a vital link between the citizen or victim and the public safety provider who may apprehend a criminal, save their worldly possessions from fire or theft, or save their life or the life of a loved one. And whereas the city of Paso Robles is fortunate to have a wonderful group of dedicated, trained professional safety dispatchers. And whereas these professionals need and deserve the informed support of our community, continually maintain and improve the quality of public safety dispatching services. And whereas the United States Congress has set aside the second full week of April to recognize telecommunicators and their crucial role in the protection of life and our property. Now, on behalf, therefore, it is be resolved that I, Steve Gregory, by virtue of authority vested in me as Mayor Pro Tem, and speaking on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby proclaim this week of April 14th through the 20th, 24, as National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week in the City of Paso Robles, in which to commend the dedication and contribution of our professional safety dispatchers. Please give them a round of applause. Would you like to say anything?
Thank you very much for this recognition, and I'm very proud to work for the city and protect my officers, protect my firefighters and city staff that we work closely with. I'm very pleased to have been here for 16 years and hopefully another 15 more too. Oh, sorry.
Good. She's all right. Thank you all. Thank you very much. And thank you the other dispatchers too. Okay, Rabbi Mayor Gordon. Okay. Education and Sharing Day. Friday, April 19th. I'm going to have you hold that. April 19th, whereas basis for the continuity of society is education in the city of Paso Robles, and education of our youth is a priority. And whereas, in order to achieve the highest goals, education must not only impart knowledge, but also teach the students how to live, forming and strengthening their moral character to make a better life for themselves as individuals and for society as a whole. Whereas global spiritual leader, the Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Schneerson, is that right? Of righteous memory, stressed that a moral and ethical education empowers every individual to develop their full potential in making the world a better place. Whereas such an education can nurture the unity of the diverse peoples through encouraging increased acts of goodness and kindness, imbued with the awareness that even a single positive act of an individual can change the world and usher in an era of global peace. And whereas April 19th, 2024, will mark 121 years of Rebbe's birth, and this year begins celebrations of the 75th anniversary of his leadership in the Chabad Lubavitch movement. Chabad is an acronym for three Hebrew words: wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. Whereas Education and Sharing Day is observed each year on Rebbe's birthday in recognition of his outstanding and lasting contributions toward the improvement of education, morality, and acts of charity around the world, a day to pause and reflect on our responsibility to ensure youth have the foundation necessary to live lives rich in purpose and fulfillment of through service and good works. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Steve Gregory, in the virtue of authority vested in me as Mayor Pro Tem, in speaking on behalf of Together and Create a Better, Brighter, More Promising Future, the entire City Council, do here proclaim Friday, April 19th, to be Education and Sharing Day in the city of Paso Robles, and call upon everyone to work together to create a better, brighter, and more promising future for all.
Thank you. Thank you. Just gonna take a moment to thank the City Council for the proclamation and just to speak to the Rebbe's messaging on education and sharing, where the Rebbe, who was born back 122 years ago in Ukraine, escaped the horrors of Europe of the time, made it to the United States in 1941, and made it his life's mission not only to care and to promote and to re-energize the Jewish community, but to care for our society at large, and put a major focus on education. The Rebbe would teach that education is not only about teaching knowledge and academics, but also about teaching morals and values and ethics, and preparing the next generation to not just teaching them how to make a living, but also how to live a life, and sharing and caring for other people. And we appreciate this proclamation. And I want to encourage all of you to take some time on Friday to think about these ideas. We're all either educators to children or to our acquaintances or to people we meet in the street. And when we interact with other people, let's do it in a way that promotes not just information, but also character building and sharing and teaching those ethics and values that make our society a better society. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi. And our next is Parkinson's Awareness Month, and is Vic here? Vic, well, okay. Seeing he's not here, I'll just go ahead and read it for us. Whereas Parkinson's disease is a chronic, progressive neurological disease and is the second most common neurodegenerative disease in the United States. Whereas Parkinson's disease is estimated to affect approximately 1 million people in the United States, and prevalence will rise to 1.2 million by 2030. And whereas 90,000 new people are diagnosed each year in the United States with Parkinson's disease, and whereas Parkinson's disease is the fourth leading cause of death in the United States according to the Center of Disease Control and Prevention, whereas it is estimated the economic burden of Parkinson's disease is at least $52 billion annually, including direct and indirect costs, including treatment, Social Security payments, lost income to patients and family members. And whereas research suggests the cause of Parkinson's disease is a combination of genetic and environmental factors, but the exact cause and progression of the disease is still unknown today. And whereas the symptoms of Parkinson's disease vary from person to person and can include tremors, slowness of movement, rigidity, difficulty with balance, swallowing, chewing, speaking, cognitive impairment, and dementia, mood disorders, and a variety of other non-motor symptoms. And whereas volunteers, researchers, caregivers, and medical professionals are working to improve the quality of life with persons living with Parkinson's disease and their family. And whereas increased research, education, and community support services, such as those provided by the Parkinson's Foundation and other organizations, are needed to find more effective treatments to provide access to quality care to those living with this disease.
Now, therefore, be resolved that I, Steve Gregory, Mayor Pro Tem, by the virtue of authority vested in me, and speaking on behalf of the entire City Council, I do hereby proclaim the month of April to be Parkinson's Awareness Month. Okay. And thank you for that group. And are you getting tired of my voice yet? Here we go. So our next one is Sexual Assault Awareness Month proclamation. And is Juan Ramirez here? Oh, good one. Thank you. Okay, so Sexual Assault Awareness Month, April 2024. Whereas Sexual Assault Action Month calls attention to the fact that sexual and intimate partner violence is widespread and impacts every person in Paso Robles. And whereas the marginalization of certain groups in society, including undocumented individuals, transgender individuals, and those living with disabilities, increases their vulnerability to sexual violence. And whereas, although progress has been made towards preventing and ending sexual violence, important work remains to be done. And whereas Lumina Alliance continues to provide a safe environment to those affected by sexual violence with crisis intervention, counseling, education, and emergency safe housing with the help of the dedicated volunteers and professional. Whereas Lumina Alliance has provided services to 1,397 people in 2022 and 23, including answering 2,189 calls on their crisis line. Whereas Luminous Alliance has provided 380 survivors with more than 4,800 sessions of therapy in 22 and 23. Whereas Luminous Alliance is celebrating the 45th anniversary of serving survivors of sexual and intimate partner violence in San Luis Obispo County in 2024. Whereas Lumen Alliance encourages the community to recognize our collective power to create a culture that is simultaneously supports survivors and nurtures a world where everyone can live free from violence. And whereas the City of Paso Robles strongly supports the efforts of Lumen Alliance, how every segment of our society can work together and better address sexual violence, and how to help survivors connect with the services. Now, therefore, be resolved that I, Steve Gregory, Mayor Pro Tem, by the virtue of authority vested in me as that person, and speaking on behalf of the entire City Council, in recognition of the important work done by the sexual violence programs, do hereby proclaim the month of April to be National Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mayor. Thank you, City Council, for this proclamation. My name is Juan Ramirez. I'm a board member for Lumina Alliance that has been serving survivors for 45 years. We are so grateful for this proclamation and with the support of our local leaders.